Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
And welcome to episode 18. I'm Kelly Ash, research associate with the Center for Rural Policy and Development. In a previous episode, we discussed the importance of rural grocery stores. Kathy Drager, the statewide director of the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships at the University of Minnesota, discussed their recently published report outlining results from a survey they sent to the rural grocery stores across Minnesota. For this episode, we brought her back to dive a bit deeper into a specific issue related to the future of rural grocery stores, the rise of the dollar store. Joining us is Monica Garvey, PhD candidate with the Department of Sociology at the University of Minnesota, who also did research on this topic. In this conversation, we discuss the strategies used by these dollar store type businesses that has made them so successful, how communities can better support their local businesses and grocery stores, how our resources need to be shifted towards business retention and not necessarily creation, and how the closing of a school led to the expansion of a hardware store and the creation of a new grocery store, liquor store, and coffee shop for one community.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast. My name is Julie Tesh, President and CEO for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Joining me today are our friends from the University of Minnesota Extension. Monica Garvey is a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology at the University of Minnesota, and Kathy Drager is the Director of Extension's Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks, Julie.
Yeah. You're welcome. Glad to have you back. And Kathy, the podcast we recorded before went really well. So happy with the results of, I shouldn't say the results of the survey. We knew the results of the survey, but with the feedback that you've all been getting and people really understanding, can you just talk a little bit about the response you've all received since the survey came out last year?
So we were happy to be able to do another rural grocery survey. And again, we did it in 2015 and then at the end of 2019, repeated that just to kind of get a sense of where that sector was at. And so it was really gratifying to get a really good response rate on the survey, and the information's really helping us to really highlight the important role that these, you know, anchor Main Street businesses play in small towns throughout Minnesota. So there's about 250 small town grocery stores in the state. And I know Rural Policy and Development did a landmark study a number of years ago about the loss of those stores. And I think there's probably some good news on some fronts as well about these rural groceries.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, can you remind them, what type of population of a town are we looking at with talking about a small grocery store?
So the definition we used was a community with 2,500 or fewer people. So we're really looking at those, not necessarily those regional hubs, but really those small towns that are located throughout the state that really still maintain those independent businesses. And we found that really the vast majority of them, like 91%, are owned by, privately held by kind of mom and pop grocery shops, like we've traditionally become, you know, they've traditionally been viewed.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? That's so great that it still is 91%, because I think people think of, in this day and age, everything is owned by a corporation or a conglomerate. So that's really, really nice to hear. I know one of the many interesting things in the report was talking about dollar stores and also about super centers and chain grocery stores, because those provide such competition for our local grocery stores. And I know with the center here, we've talked about buying patterns and shopping patterns, especially with the pandemic. I would be really curious, you know, in 6 months from now, to see what shopping patterns happen with online and whatnot. But what I really want to talk about today is that competition, and especially the dollar stores. And I don't want to put them out by name, I guess, or single them out, but basically those stores that are popping up and providing competition, good, bad, or indifferent. Your survey does a really good job of laying that out. And I know just in my little area, Wells, Minnesota, just south of me, there's a great grocery store, great local grocery store, and literally right next to it is a dollar store, literally. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. And the parking lots are both typically equally full, but if there is more, there's typically more at the dollar store. And so, you know, it's great to have it's great to have affordable goods available, but, you know, I know in the survey, we can talk about that in the long run. So Monica, I'm going to turn it over to you since you did a lot of the research and the analysis on this. Why don't you give us like a 3,000 foot view of the dollar store? I don't even want to call it a phenomenon, but phenomena in general here in rural Minnesota.
Yeah. So what we're seeing, and we saw this in the recession and with the COVID-19 crisis, is one category of businesses that are doing very, very well in this economy right now that so many people are panicking about is dollar stores. They've entered so many rural markets, especially. So what we're seeing with dollar store location strategy is that they're locating in very small communities and in low-income communities. And for communities that are looking for affordable products, especially with rural areas losing incomes over time, many people are welcoming them because they can afford to shop there. But what we're also seeing is, you know, so many other types of businesses are struggling, and it's kind of confusing. Like, how is it that dollar stores are doing so well in this economy? And part of that is that they're easy to set up. They have a very minimalistic kind of infrastructure or structure for their buildings, right? And people are kind of desperate for products that are near home because they're locating where other stores won't. So people don't have to drive 40 miles to get basic products. But what we are seeing is that presents a huge level of competition for small businesses.
Absolutely. And that right there, I mean, it's a strategy. These stores don't end up in our small communities by accident.
No, and it is
very strategic.
Yep. Dollar stores are very much publicizing that this is their strategy, and they're marketing the strategy as a boon to rural communities, as a way to support them where other businesses won't. It's a similar strategy that Walmart had when they entered the market in the 70s and 80s.
Wow. And looking at the statistics from your survey here, that more than half of the grocers you surveyed, so 54%, had a dollar store move into their community in the past 5 years. And then 11% of rural grocery stores report a dollar store is actively being planned to move into their community. So that just goes to show that, yeah, they have a strategy and it works well for them. And then also one other statistic I wanted to mention here is that 80% of rural grocers reported a dollar store located within 15 miles of their store. And that just is very stunning to me. I mean, that's crazy.
And I just want to contrast that, Julie, with how we started talking about this sector of rural grocery stores, mm-hmm. You know, that nearly all of them, you know, over 90% are privately independently owned stores. And I just want to contrast that with the dollar store, which is a publicly traded. So when the dollar store makes profit, that's going to shareholders who I would guess almost none of which are living in your community, right? So when that dollar store in your small town in Wells, Minnesota, when that dollar store has a profit, that's going to people who are holding stock in dollar stores. That's not going back to the community. But really what we see and we saw in this rural grocery survey is that when there's a profit, if there's a profit, and we know that rural grocery stores have a very narrow margin, that really those dollars stay in the community, whether that's in, you know, a course in wages, but also those contributions to, you know, whether it's the 4-H club or the softball team or whomever. So I just want to contrast that, having someone in your community who owns that business versus having a, you know, a national corporate that returns those profits, really takes those profits out of the community. So I just want to just point that out as a business model that's in contrasting what we, the current model that we do have.
No, that's a really good thing to point out. And I'm glad you did, Kathy, because, you know, you think about competition, and competition is good. I think competition makes people and businesses better, but there's a limit as well. And when you're thinking about what's that balance between something being affordable, because dollar stores do, like you said, Monica, dollar stores will go into more low-income areas. And those are in a lot of rural areas. And, uh-huh. you know, so they might provide cheaper goods, but they might not, it might not be fresh goods. It might not be produce, but at what cost, you know, to right. other grocery store.
And you're bringing up two issues that are really important. One is the nutrition impact that it has. I mean, right now, when we're looking at rural food access, and really any food access problems anywhere, the biggest concern is nutritional outcomes, public health impacts. We have communities that are losing healthcare providers and increasing cases of food-related illness. And in rural communities that have dollar stores, if that's the closest resource for food, that is a huge problem for community health. Also, if it's one of the few resources for affordable food, that's another issue. Now, affordability is an interesting concept on its own when we're thinking about what it is people are aiming to buy. Rural grocery stores aren't always as expensive as people think that they are when it comes to how much money we're spending on transportation and other resources to get to our food.
Chime in and say, when we talk about the affordability, I have heard that from grocers that, for example, you may think you're getting a better deal on, for example, a specific brand of soup that you're buying from the dollar store, but it's a different size product. So, for example, the grocery store is getting it in a 12-ounce side. The dollar store is selling a 10-ounce size. And where it may look like it's cheaper, it actually is a sizing issue. And then as far as the pricing, I want to reiterate what Monica said, that there some of these small-town grocery stores, you can shop very economically at these stores as well. Like, follow the circular. So when I first moved to Big Stone County and started shopping at Bonnie's Hometown Grocery in Clinton, Minnesota, population 450, I got the circular in the mail every week. And, you know, it became something that my family and I would do. I would, when they came in the mail, I'd give the kids a magic marker and let them sit down and circle what they wanted. Not that they got it all, but at least they could circle. And it really helped us become familiar with what were the products that were on sale that week at the grocery store. So there's ways to shop at grocery stores. And then just to take it upstream another click, we have heard from the wholesalers, who are actually the people who drive their trucks to these small town to put the groceries on the shelves, that there is some, and I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but the pricing is different for different wholesalers. So this particular wholesaler, and he actually put this in writing and sent me a note, that if he backs up his semi to a dock at a processed food manufacturer, and he loads an entire semi load of one product, that if in the next dock over there's a truck from one of the big box stores, that those two semis, even though they're loaded with identical items and identical quantities, could have different pricing. And I know that, as you know, American closely held value is economy of scale, right? We kind of say, like, if you buy that 20 roll thing of toilet paper, you'll pay less than if you buy the four. But in some cases, what is the scale? If one semi load of one manufactured food item and you have two semis side by side, we really, it's not necessarily the quantity, it's really the corporate power of each of those buyers that is at question. It's not even the quantity that's going into that semi. It's how much buying power or just pure power is behind that corporation. And that puts some of these smaller stores at a bit of a disadvantage just in wholesale pricing. And so we know that the margin is the same or lower in these small town grocery stores as they are in larger community grocery stores. I just want your listeners to be clear that if there's discrepancies in pricing, that those are often passed on from the manufacturer to the wholesaler to the grocer. And I was asked to present some of the findings of this rural grocery work to the Minnesota House Agriculture Committee. And I had a grocer say to me, and he again put this in writing so I could share it with the committee, that his wholesale price for milk was higher than the retail price at the big box store down the road. And in Minnesota, we do have a milk pricing law that you can't price it below wholesale. So how is it that that retail store has a lower price than a relatively good-sized grocery store just down the road? So just want to say that sometimes there are inequities in the pricing and the business model, but that there's a lot of benefits that come from keeping your main street grocery store open and having that local access to the whole range of foods. And that maybe there's some issues down the road that we could look at just to, you know, make sure that there is a level playing field for these grocers as well.
Boy, that'd be utopian society. That'd be great. Monica, let's discuss some of those strategies that the dollar stores might use. You know, we said it's very calculated. Like what are they looking for in a community?
Mm-hmm. So what they're often looking for in a community is low-income consumers and middle-class consumers, because honestly, middle-class consumers love a good deal just as much as anybody else. Upper-class consumers love a good deal, right? But enough people who don't have a choice about where they shop. So the low-income consumer matters to them, and also an environment that doesn't have other stores, right? Lacking competition in terms of who they're closest to really is an important part of their strategy. Beyond that, it is not actually that complicated. When a dollar store is considering going into a community, they're often negotiating with planning councils and zoning councils about the environmental impact, the blight that it may have on the landscape. And a lot of opposition comes from communities that are very much invested in the appeal of their community in terms of aesthetics. Quaint communities that are attracting people because of tourism will very much express concern about a dollar store coming in because of that kind of assumption that it's cheap goods, the storefront isn't fancy, they're not going to put out landscaping. And a lot of times these dollar stores will negotiate with communities and say, okay, well, we'll go according to your zoning rules, or we'll fit into the community code for buildings. But then once they enter into the market, they pull back on those, saying, well, you need us here, we're good for your community, we're creating jobs, etc. Now, the jobs that they create, though, are some of the lowest paying jobs in the community, and it isn't very many in comparison to better, longer lasting jobs at locally run businesses. Additionally, like Kathy had said, this money leaves the community, and a lot of times dollar stores go in and present to the city that they will be bringing in tax revenue, property tax dollars, development, et cetera. But then in their negotiation, they will negotiate discounts on utilities, discounts on taxes, and then in the long run are actually being paid to be there by the community instead of contributing. So their strategies are complex. And what I meant to get to earlier is the feeling that this is an extractive business, where they're going into communities and extracting resources and not contributing them back, and then finding ways to distract attention. For example, dollar stores will have a scholarship fund for their employees to help them go to school, which is great, right? That is a contribution to the community. But when you're taking dollars out of that community that don't return, how much of a return is it really? You know, so these strategies are very interesting. They're distracting. Clearly, I'm not neutral about how I feel about it. But the research is supporting this, right? Is really the big pros are that people save money on products that they need, like toilet paper, cleaning supplies, canned goods. And that's it.
Interesting. That and that brings me to my next question is, why is it that dollar stores, they're causing problems for rural grocery stores, but not other types of businesses? They're not causing problems for the hardware store or other businesses. Why is that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say they aren't causing problems for some of those stores. So I have been contacted by communities that were really concerned that a dollar store might undermine their ability to keep a pharmacy in their community, because the pharmacy also sold some of those things, those household, the shampoos and, the personal care items as well. And so I have been contacted by a community that was concerned about the well-being of their pharmacy, just because they did have a part of their business model that was retail. So there are other businesses that can be impacted by having a dollar store come into the community. And I commonly do get calls from communities about on what basis they can, object to having a dollar store come into their community. So there's a lot of people who are interested in, keeping their economy local, keeping these long-standing businesses. I mean, in some of these communities, those grocery stores have changed hands a number of times, but they've been in the community for years. And then, what is going to be the impact, and how long will a corporation, stay in that community once, let's say, their building is past its shelf life? Grocers, we're seeing, like, for example, I'll give the example of Halsted, Minnesota. In Halsted, about two and a half years ago, their school, they had a school building in the school, and they consolidated, and that school building was no longer going to be used for students anymore, which was a heartbreak. It's always a heartbreak when this happens to a community. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, within weeks, the grocery store on Main Street, they just, without any notice, without any fanfare, they just closed their doors. They were like, the school is gone, there's less traffic, the grocery store just kind of gave up the ghost. There was a local hardware store owner who saw an opportunity there. He was running out of space for his hardware store, so he built a new building in Halsted that is the hardware store expanded, the grocery store, a liquor store, and he put a little community coffee shop in the corner with windows so people could look out. Now, that's the kind of strategy, kind of that we could call it even a 21st century strategy for what our small towns need, rather than exporting wealth by putting in a dollar store that will be there for the life of their building. Whereas you have another local investor, business person with roots in the community who knows the community needs and is willing to, make an investment. So I think, like, for example, in Halsted is one example of a community being creative. And actually, I met with when they were planning and talking about building this grocery store in Halsted, one of their analysis was there a chance a dollar store would come in? And when they said no, I mean, that was really a conversation they had. They felt that they would be relatively safe from having a dollar store, so that they were, you know, that helped to tip the scale in favor of building this new multi-purpose brand new store in their community. So that's just kind of one example. I think we could point to others as well.
A really neat model, because, you know, I know we talk about the negatives and everything, but there's so many opportunities if a community or a business or a group of people are willing to rally around an idea and really understanding that. I think in this day of everything being online, especially during the pandemic, to get your thing, your goods safely, whether that's food, toilet paper, whatnot, and you don't think about that impact locally, or maybe you do more, because I know a lot of local grocery stores around here had stellar business at the beginning of the pandemic, just, you know, stellar. And I'd be curious how they're doing now, but I know I try to pay more attention to where I shop. I'm just as guilty as anyone. I mean, I live out in the country on a farm, and I am equidistant between a couple family run grocery stores and then, you know, Hy-Vee, Target, Walmart. And it's all a matter of choice. And I have to remind myself, no, I need to go, even though it's in the exact opposite direction of where I want to go or need to go, I need to go there and support the local grocery store. Because Kathy, like you've talked before, it's really about community. And, you know, that's where people go. You put your flyer up for, you know, your chili feed. They support different organizations. That's, kids get jobs there. It's just such a community aspect of it. So
that is practical. It's practical too, mm-hmm. Julie. I mean, what we did see during COVID, and I was holding my breath to see if our supply chains were going to hold, and they did. But what we saw is having a diversity of supply chains was actually very protective of our population. The same people who are stocking the shelves, the same trucks and wholesalers and system that's stocking the shelves at Super Target are not the same people who are stocking the shelves in small town Minnesota. And I can give you an example. When COVID hit, Alexandria, Minnesota had a run on paper products. And there was a day in Morris when people were from Alexandria heard that Morris, Minnesota still had paper products, and they were lined up when the store's doors opened first thing in the morning. And then Morris ran out. But I will say, like Clinton, Minnesota, 35 miles away from Morris, never had a bare shelf for paper products, you know? And, you know, I think there's a couple things going on. I think in a small town, people are less likely to hoard. I actually had, don't mean to digress, but someone posted on Facebook, like, if you see me buying toilet paper, it's because I really need toilet paper. I am not hoarding toilet paper. So people were actually embarrassed to put it in their cart because they didn't want their neighbors to think they were one of those right. toilet paper hoarders. But having diverse supply chains is protective of us as a population. I don't care if it's a blizzard or a pandemic or, you know, some other unexpected things that happen to us. The more diversity you have in how goods and food and things are traveling throughout our area, the more resilient you are, the more options there are. It's just a plan A, a plan B, a plan C. So keeping these independent small town stores open is, I think, really critical to our well-being. And kudos to you for making the choice to also to, you know, vote with your grocery dollars to support those small town stores, because I think a lot of people were really happy they didn't have to go into a large population area during the pandemic to be able to buy food, you know? And I think you're right. We saw a huge boon in those small town stores because people realized, well, you know, a little less traffic, a little less people, and actually a wider range of healthy foods, from fresh to frozen to, you know, canned and meats and dairy and all those things. They were right there, you know, in your small town. You didn't have to drive to, you know, Hy-Vee or Target or someplace else to stock your cart. So
another thing that I thought was significant about the post-COVID response for these small town grocery stores is their ability to respond so quickly to community needs. Large chain stores and larger communities had a really hard time setting up an infrastructure to respond to people's needs. But in rural communities and smaller stores are able to deliver food to people who were ill or who couldn't drive into town to get them or were nervous about being exposed to illness. They were able to set up the physical barriers and require masks before everybody else because they weren't dealing with kind of these corporate structures that create barriers to getting things done quickly too. And I have to say, like, just how quickly these rural stores responded to their community needs just blew my mind. So, so fast, so resilient.
That's great. Yeah, it's great because, you know, they might not have an online platform for ordering, but it's even easier. It's called a telephone, and you can call them up and place your order and they will either deliver it or you can come and they'll put it in your trunk or the back of your car. You know, I think people sometimes get very centered on, oh my gosh, they don't have an online platform. What am I going to do? Well, probably have to talk to a human, and that's probably a good thing, you know? And so it's, like you said, they've been able to be so nimble. And I think sometimes we don't think of small town businesses as nimble, but they can be, and they are. I want to move into talking about healthy foods. I know that is an issue just in so many different levels, because in rural areas, we typically don't receive as many fresh, healthy fruits and vegetables and foods in general, whether that's dairy, meat, whatnot. And talking about rural areas being more low income areas. And, you know, I do think there is a place for dollar stores. How do we go about finding that balance? Because I know, you know, dollar stores, if you have a very limited income, you can go to the dollar store and you can feed your family. It might not be the healthiest, but they will be fed. Find that balance, or what are you seeing out in Minnesota that be, you know, working with that? You know, are certain communities requiring that a dollar store have some fresh goods?
So I can just speak to that. I actually think our first strategy should be to bolster the infrastructure we do have, that is a pipeline for healthy food. Instead of putting new coolers or new freezers into a dollar store, let's look at the ones that we already have. And let's try to bolster those places that already have the full range of healthy food options. So I have to say I'm not a fan of the let's bolster the dollar stores, because I feel like we've already got healthy food infrastructure in a lot of these small town stores, and we should just be building upon that. I mean, I did propose a research study probably about 4 or 5 years ago about comparing the grocery basket, like consumers' grocery basket when you're shopping at a small town grocery compared to a dollar store, both in terms of money and in terms of nutrition. But I think right now the state of Minnesota has done a fabulous job helping all these small town stores to be compliant with the grocery readers that are for WIC and for SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs. And so really the majority of small town stores are able to provide for low income families. So to your question too about nutrition, I mean, if any of your listeners are in a place like, I know it's common in Big Stone County, there's 1 month or 2 months a year, I think it's like March and November, where we do big food drives for our food shelf. And what I've started doing, right, and I know food shelves are asking for money, not just, you know, don't just give us a case of tuna fish or peanut butter, but they're looking for funds. What I do is I provide gift certificates to the grocery store, to our small town stores, that I give those to the food shelf as my donation for the food drive. That way, you know, people from different parts of the county, because our county is big and our food shelf is on the very southern edge. So it could be a 60 miles round trip for someone to go to the food shelf. But if they have a gift certificate for the grocery store in their community, You know, that gives them a different kind of food access. So, I mean, I know it's not a solution, but then also I will say that the food shelf in Big Stone County does buy groceries from our small town grocery stores. And that serves two purposes. It provides food for the people who in the community that need that assistance, but it also keeps the doors open so that we all can have access to the whole range of fresh groceries. So I think there's some strategies that are and strategies for these stores, like working with the food shelf buying food from the groceries, you know, people who can donate, and then making sure that all the programs that provide assistance are accessible for grocery stores. And kudos to Minnesota, state of Minnesota, for really paying attention to small town stores and helping them get the needed equipment to be able to serve those communities.
What Kathy was saying about the role of support for stores. So state and public resources are often put into attracting new businesses to small towns, especially those that have lost industries. And they're trying to attract businesses because if businesses don't exist in a community, people won't come back into communities, or they might lose populations. What a lot of towns are doing is, instead of rewarding a new business like Dollar General, is taking those resources and reinvesting them into existing businesses. Like we saw with, did you say Halsted earlier, Kathy, that had expanded a business to meet the community needs? And I would say that that's also a solution, is instead of rewarding new business, continuing to support those businesses with resources. And that is a policy issue. And often we blame consumers for choices that they're making, but they're incredibly constrained because of income problems, because of location, because of transportation, aging in place, all of these issues. You just have to feed your family. And so it is important that we look at these structural solutions, because we can't blame consumers if they don't have resources.
And I'm just going to do a tip of the hat to the city of Fairfax, Minnesota. Their grocery store closed a couple of years ago, and the city really stepped in as a bridge to try to figure out what the options were. They wanted a grocery store and in their town, and they had recently had a dollar store move in, but they wanted to have a grocery store. So the city, you know, really invested time and even some dollars into helping to find a new owner. And I think they opened in August 2020. So there's another example of a municipality that realized how important this was for the community, and they stepped up to make sure that they kept a full service grocery store in Fairfax, Minnesota. So tip of the hat to that community as well. I think it would be a great case study for how communities can creatively, you know, keep those grocery stores open. In this case, they had a smokehouse restaurant that was on Main Street that they actually were the people who are now owning the store. And so I think there's a good synergy there. Their restaurant's on Main Street, their grocery store's a few blocks away, but I think that what I heard is that they're selling some of the meals that they're preparing at the restaurant, they then can sell, you know, prepackaged retail at the grocery store. So I think there's certain, you know, again, different models. We can be creative and keep these stores in communities.
I would like to build on that. Absolutely. With an interesting way that cities have, or municipalities have, supported grocery stores in their communities. And we haven't really seen this in Minnesota, but it's happened in Florida and Kansas, I think, is for stores that are struggling. A lot of times it's the building that is a big challenge, is keeping up buildings. So when you have such low profit margins, the money that comes in usually just gets reinvested in buying more food products for the community to buy, not new infrastructure. So what a very small amount of communities have done is The municipality owns the property and the building, and the business owner owns the business. And that has allowed a lot more room for these businesses to stay in town, to thrive. And thriving in a small community doesn't mean profiting heavily, right? It just means getting by. And I would love to see more communities attempt to do that, because I do think that it might be a more sustainable model for grocery stores.
And that line of thinking, as we look at ending the podcast here, but what can community members do? What can municipalities do to either A, help support their existing small town grocery store, or B, start a small town grocery store?
You know, let's start really simply. Why don't you, you know, next time you're in Wells, Julie, just, you know, say thank you to that grocer. I said thank you to a grocer in Benson, Minnesota. He had to be in his 80s. And I thanked him. He helped me walk out my groceries to my car, and I thanked him. And he started to cry, you know, like he literally got choked up because I said, thank you for, you know, providing good, healthy food to this community for all these years. And he was really moved by that. And then I will say later, I was at a basketball tournament, someone from the community came up and said, what did you say to Daryl that made him cry? And I was like, I just thanked him. Really, I didn't say anything mean to Daryl. You know, so, you know, just start by thanking these people. And then I would say, make sure you are, you know, when you have grocery, when you're doing your grocery runs, make sure you go to your local grocery store. Maybe not just for toilet paper, milk, and bananas, but, you know, grab your full basket of food. And if your grocer doesn't carry the exact things you want, you know, talk to that grocer. Grocers are more than happy. They're a business. They will help accommodate, you know, whether that's gluten-free or, you know, organic carrots or whatever the thing is that you want to buy. You know, these grocers are willing to accommodate you. I've seen communities do fundraisers, just like Monica was referring to. I saw a community where the store was having roofing issues, and they put up a big tent and they had a barbecue fee, and it was a free will donation to get a new roof on the grocery store. So there's those kind of practical things. But then there's also opportunities that these grocers probably wouldn't be able to take advantage of. I mean, USDA Rural Development has some, you know, community infrastructure grants. You know, work with your grocer. Maybe that community, whether it's a city or a county economic development authority, can really help do like some of these multi-purpose building functions. You know, people who know how to access those funds can help put their, you know, skills to work in supporting, you know, those businesses for their community. And I don't think we necessarily need, we don't need to depend on those outside, those dollar stores coming in to our communities. We can start with the businesses that we have and really get a firm foundation there, and find out what some of those needs are for our community, and then match those with the skills and the assets and the resources that we can find.
Right. And I think of too, you know, thinking of your own individual talents, and if, say, you're a grant writer, you know, offering your services, whether it's to the grocery store, to the city, to whomever, because those processes are very daunting. And, you know, I know a lot of places and towns don't apply for those dollars because it is so daunting and they don't know where to start. So even just offering to help them to try and find some resources, whether that's USDA or a local foundation, a family foundation, whatnot. I think that's part of it too, is just meeting them where they're at and saying, I can help you with this.
Contacting your electric utility for what rebates are there if I update my lighting, you know, I mean, those are all things that I think that our municipalities and our economic development authorities could really put their shoulder to the wheel and help these businesses take advantage of some of those things that already exist too.
Future of our local grocery stores. If you want to look into a crystal ball, what are you seeing in the next couple of years? Monica, I'll start with you.
I don't want to be a downer, but I do think that the pressure that independent businesses are under right in this global economy is going to be increasingly difficult. all businesses are faced with having to do more with less, offer things cheaper, get more, pay less for it at wholesale. And it's just, the system is not set up for independence. So I think that we will continue to see challenges in that area. What I do think there is a promise for is, you know, rural people aren't happy right now, and they're letting their politicians know that they need more support. And I do think that maybe we are at a place where some of the public policy, whether it's ease of application for funds and support, or not supplementing corporate interests, but supplementing independent businesses, I think that that is going to potentially improve. But we do need to keep pushing that no matter where we're living. I think that there are some promises in the future there.
I'm really hopeful that, like, for example, that this pandemic really helped people who maybe didn't even see that grocery store on Main Street, didn't even think about it, that now it's part of, I hope that people will continue to support these stores. And yes, I agree, like with what Monica said, that, you know, there's lots of opportunities. Rural people have been innovative. We're seeing innovative models emerging for how these stores are reopening. Like, I can name four communities that are opening grocery stores right now after a hiatus of a couple of years where those, you know, the store closed down and people thought that was it. And now we're seeing new models of what this can mean. I mean, I think that, Julie, just you're doing this podcast, and I will tell you, when we write newsletter articles, people are really interested in these small town businesses. You know, they're kind of the underdog. I hope we're all kind of rooting for them, and you know, that we can find some ways to continue to put a spotlight on these. These are really important assets in our state for food access, and that, you know, I know they're private businesses, but they're doing a lot of public good. And so we need to just keep remembering that when we lose these assets, that has a lot of ripple effects for community health and well-being. So I just encourage us to, you know, from wherever we sit, consumer or, you know, economic development or state agency or, you know, heck, as farmers, we can do farm to grocery work as well, which we didn't talk about, but
that's another podcast.
Yes. So I think there's all sorts of opportunities for us to be supportive of this sector, because this sector is really important to Greater Minnesota's well-being.
And I think it all comes down to community. I think that's something that we've taken for granted, and especially during this pandemic, I know that's one thing I miss. Is my community. And I have, you know, people have many communities, whether that's family or friends, you know, church or sports, whatever, but it's that community. And I'm hoping that when this is all said and done, that people will still value that and value that even more in supporting their local community and all of the shops and businesses that are there. And remember these hard times that we're going through right now, and that, no, this is important. This is very important, and this is why I live here, is to be a part of a community. So thank you both for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it. And yes, Kathy, we needed to continue to discuss more of the farm to grocery store aspect, because I know we could talk for a long time about that too. But Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And actually, let our listeners know, where can they find your...
Gosh, we have a simple URL for that, which I don't remember, but if you go to rsdp.umn.edu, we've got a whole body of rural grocery work there. It shows up right on our front page at rsdp.umn.edu, and you'll find a lot of resources that can support your small town grocery, as well as the survey results.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.